Hi, folks. Keith Jones for Front Row Knowles. We appreciate your listening to our podcasts and all the things that go into what we do in terms of watching Florida State athletics. But we would remind you that part of Florida State athletics is certainly Seminole boosters. Athletics can't do what they do without the support of you and without the support of Seminole boosters. So we encourage you, if you're not already a member, consider joining Seminole boosters. If you are a member, consider increasing your participation. Without Seminole boosters, Florida State athletics is going to be run of the mill. With Seminole boosters, Florida State can work their way towards elite. And oh, by the way, they're doing pretty good on the football field. They're doing pretty good on the pitch for soccer. And they're getting ready to do good on both the men and women's side on the hardwood. Join Seminole boosters, support Seminole boosters, and continue to support Front Row Knowles. Go Knowles!
Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Good day, everybody. Tom Block, Keith Jones with you. This is Front Row Knowles. KJ, good to see you, sir.
Good to be seen. Good to be seen. As we are taping on Tuesday afternoon evening, it's cold outside, Tommy. It's cold.
It is. And I don't want to paint the wrong picture here, Keith, but you're looking very official today, which is to say you're actually like dressed up because you're still at the office. A lot of times we do this show a little bit later and Keith looks like maybe bed is the next order of business after brushing his teeth. So I'm glad to see that I caught you earlier in the day.
Fortunately, our listeners are listeners and not viewers, because sometimes I don't have pants on, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason you and I do radio, Keith. Probably many, as a matter of fact. So we're going to have Bob Ferrante join us, and it's been a little while since we talked with Bob, since before the Orange Bowl. He'll join us next segment, our Osceola Insider. But there's just no slowdown in the football cycle. And Keith, you and I didn't do a special show about Mike Norvell staying. We'll dive into this with Bob, but I could argue it either way. I certainly would not have faulted him had he taken the job, given what Alabama's been. But I also can say, if you're going to make $10 million a year and you don't have to move your family around every 3 years and you don't have the weight of the expectations of Saban and you can win a national title at FSU, well, those are pretty compelling reasons to stay at FSU.
Had several conversations with folks just casually, and obviously one of the things that jumps out, we had the same conversation as we got towards the tail end of Coach Bowden's tenure, is you don't want to be the guy replacing the legend. And I think FSU lucked out. Maybe it wasn't exactly the way they intended it to be, but with Jimbo coming in and being the coach in white waiting for that short period of time, it transitioned pretty well. But the bottom line, I think the book still remains. I think the chapter is still legitimate that says he might not want to be the guy replacing the legend.
There is some irony to the fact that whenever people trot out lists about who replaced Bear Bryant, who replaced Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler and pick all these names, right? It typically didn't go well. And then at FSU, somehow they got it right. And the next guy won a national title. And I don't know. I don't know who else had that success at Miami when Butch Davis left to go to the NFL. Larry Coker stepped into a completely loaded team, right? And he won a national title. But
wasn't he already there? Wasn't Coker already there?
He was already there, yeah.
And that's my point. Now you're coming in cold, replacing the legend. And I think there's still fear in that, although I would suspect Alabama will be okay.
Well, let's spin it more. I think the last point there, obviously it's my point, so I like it, right? There's all these reasons. We can talk about his family situation and we can talk about what he's paid and liking Tallahassee and those sort of things. But if he didn't believe he could win a national title at FSU, he's out the door no matter how much those other things are a check in the box. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And whether it's the transfer portal or whether it's signing high school seniors, Florida State has a great wealth of talent, and Florida is a great place to come and play football. So if you grew up in Florida and you get recruited, Florida State is a destination that you would be willing to go to. If you grew up somewhere else, you played somewhere else, and you can come to Tallahassee and play in Florida, that is appealing. So I think that aspect of it, because last time I checked, whether we pay them or we don't pay them, whether they're employees or not employees, whether they go to class or don't go to class, you're only as good as your players. And Florida State sits in a situation where you can attract and retain players.
Well, and the latest haul in the portal is evidence of that. I don't know why we were worried just because it was a slow start, because it's been a fast and furious finish. And I don't think they are finished, meaning in the spring or between now and August 1 or whenever the absolute drop dead is, there'll probably be another new name or two that'll surface. It's Keith. I know you don't like it and it's different. There is something to me about it. And we saw the opposite end of it when FSU didn't make the playoff and you had guys who were disenchanted because they had, you know, they all signed up for this 1 year, let's make a run. And they felt like they had done their part and they didn't get rewarded. But there's something about you're going to have this new group now. And it's kind of the same thing. You say, all right, we're all here for this year. I don't know where you guys are going to be next January, but for 10 months, if you do A, B, and C, we're going to be one of the top teams in the country. And I think that kind of repeats itself in terms of the refrain.
I agree. And I think the age-old thing, and we don't have the answers to it, we're very good at raising the questions on this show. You know, the last little missing piece of that is what do we put in place that would work so that kids would play in the bowl game in those off years when the bowl game is not part of the playoffs? Hopefully we don't experience much of that, but you know, in time, over a period of time, you know, FSU is not going to be one of the top 12, as other schools aren't. And that to me is a missing piece that I hope somebody comes up with an answer for.
Yeah, I think it was magnified this past year, given the circumstances for FSU, because 2 years ago, everybody opted in to play in Orlando. But you're right. It'd be nice if we could solve that. All right, we got to take a break. Come back. Bob Ferrante will join us on the Earl Bacon Agency Hotline. That's right after this on Front Row Knowles.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
Welcome back to Front Row Knowles. Tom and KJ as we open up the Earl Bacon Agency Hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency ensuring your future together, and say hello to Bob Ferrante, our Osceola Insider. Bob, I don't recall how long it's been, but it feels like a while, and the news cycle never slows down. But how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We haven't done this in the new year, but we certainly have no shortage of topics to discuss. It's been a busy couple of weeks to start 2024.
What's been going on? Something's been going on. Is there an issue, a problem, a thing?
just nothing. Nothing new. You miss nothing by being off Twitter, KJ.
Well, that's actually a true statement, Bob. You really don't miss anything if you're off Twitter or X. But we'll start with the Mike Norvell news, which is old news at this point. I mean, once you're 2 hours removed from seeing it on Twitter, it's old news, right? What did you think in the moment in that 24-hour period, Bob? Did you think this was potentially it? Were you confident that he was going to stay and that Alford would work it out and the president? Or where was your head at?
I think I was in that spot of, man, I really don't want to cover a coaching search. And I don't think the options to replace Mike Norvell is really all that good for Florida State based on just the college football coaches around the country who have gotten extensions, many of them as a result of Nick Saban's retirement. I mean, Jimmy Sexton has done his work, right? He has gotten just about everybody taken care of financially. Obviously didn't want to see Mike Norvell go just because of what he's done here, what he's meant for this program. And I think that's in part why he wanted to stay. I think he felt like he had started something and started to build something really special here. You know, Maria and Mila seem to be very happy here as a family. He's got his assistant coaches all raises and everybody seems to be moving in a good direction here. How close was it at Alabama? I'm not sure we'll ever know unless Mike Norvell reveals that down the road. But I think in the end, he got what he wanted, and it's not just a salary. It's what's good for the football program, for his staff moving forward as far as salaries and infrastructure and some of those other things for recruiting and such.
I had a couple of folks that raised the question, why was he even entertaining it? If he wanted to be at Florida State, why would he take the call? And I'm reminded of something. I'm trying to remember who even told it to me, but it goes along the lines, particularly with Jimmy Sexton, that the call goes out to Sexton first. Sexton calls Norvell, says, do you want to take the call? You can't not take the call when your agent is involved. And so whether there was genuine interest, whether there was little interest, the conversation was going to take place. No one can judge Mike for taking that call and having that conversation, in my opinion.
I think we've all been through this of various jobs. Every profession goes through this type of things. You take a call. It doesn't mean that you are taking a job. You're talking. It's about professional development or what you're curious about in life. Again, happy he stayed. We don't know how far he got down the road as far as discussions with Alabama. Even if, like you said, even if he talked, it could have been Jimmy Sexton clearly handled all those discussions with Alabama. But I'm really happy to not be covering a coaching search. Let's be honest, guys, because it would have been long, and the names, if I would have even brought them up, would have probably made a lot of Florida State fans cringe, because I just don't think they stack up to who Mike Norvell is.
Except that at the time they hired Mike Norvell, he was much like the guys that Norvell now finds in the portal. I mean, they you can see some potential, but they haven't necessarily proven it. And so it's kind of ironic. We'll talk about the portal a little bit later on. Same type thing. Just to finish this, though, in defense of Norvell a little bit here, we all remember the Jimbo days, who had the same agent and would never deny interest in any position ever. And it became an annual affair. He's going back to West Virginia, and then the Texas job was open. But that was the only reason that wasn't a big thing is because that job opened when Florida State was playing Auburn for the national title. Otherwise, that would have been a drawn out thing. And then there was LSU a couple times. And so, I mean, Norvell has not been in, you know, he's not handled it that way. I think I look at it the other way. He's been so good at Florida State that Alabama couldn't not have interest in him. It was just logical. And I haven't done the math on the mileage, but it feels like Birmingham is kind of halfway between Tallahassee and Memphis, which means he's recruited the entire area around. I mean, I think there's a Tuscaloosa, I guess I should say. I mean, I could see why Alabama would have been interested. And I think that's now a good thing for him and FSU, the fact that Alabama, the top dog, was interested in him.
And I think a lot of people have said the same thing. You want a head coach who will be pursued by a lot of the best colleges in the country. And Mike Norvell has done that. He's shown that. He's shown how to build a program from really the ground up, because it was not in a good spot when he took over in December of 2019. So I think that's a good thing in the end, is that you want a head coach who has shown what he can do.
The other part of it, and again, I hearken back to the Bobby Bowden days, but his staff enjoys working for him, and he has gone to great lengths to make sure that his staff is taken care of. And those two, is the right word, reciprocal or reciprocity? Those two things go hand in hand as you move forward, in my opinion.
Well, and the thing, you know, the comment I made about Alabama, they could not look at Norvell. I think Norvell couldn't not reflect and ask the question, can I achieve what I want to achieve at FSU? And obviously he answered yes to that question. So Bob, that goes back to my last point. I mean, last Thursday, it didn't feel like it might have a great outcome. Right now, in light of the last 6 weeks worth of news, it feels like Florida State's in a pretty good place at the moment.
Yeah, I think Florida State's in a really good place with Mike Norvell. And Jerry has written about this. I think a lot of people maybe have overlooked the storyline is the ACC champion moving forward in a 12-team playoff will have a seat guaranteed at the table. No selection committee can deny that moving forward. So the goal legitimately for Mike Norvell and the staff is compete, build a roster, develop the roster, compete for an ACC title, be in that position with Clemson, maybe with Louisville. Looks like Louisville's got some sustaining power that they're building there. But if you've got a shot to be in that ACC title game, you've got a shot to be in the playoff. And it's still an easier map to get there than going through the SEC gauntlet. I know everybody wants to be in the SEC or the Big Ten, but it looks like an easier path, right? Going through the ACC to get to one of those 12 seats in the expanded playoff.
Well, let's don't go to work for Alabama. Let's just bring all, 5 of their players over here.
plus that's a pretty darn good formula.
Yeah, plus the kids for next year that had committed to Alabama and now are decommitting and committing to FSU. So that number's only going north. That's a good segue, Bob. I will say this. I'm not surprised FSU is doing well in the portal. I'm surprised the number of guys they've brought in has gotten as high as it's gotten, and maybe that's partially a product of how many guys moved on. But I'm not in the it's not sustainable camp on this thing. I mean, I think this is where college football is, and Norvell and his staff have embraced it. They clearly evaluate well. They're going to finish with a top three or four portal class, maybe as high as number two. I mean, is it perfect? No, but is anything in college football? I mean, I don't know that recruiting out of the high school ranks is perfect either.
I think we've had this debate, and to me, it's about balance. What's the balance as you manage your roster of the high school signing class, of the transfer portal class? And to some extent, it's almost an NFL roster management formula. It's how much draft emphasis, how much salary cap, I'm sorry, how much free agent emphasis. You can't be too much into free agency because then you blow a salary cap. You can't be too much into the portal because it's really all about building a roster through your 85 scholarships. You've got to build to some extent through your high school signees. But then again, we've seen the formula on the offensive line and the defensive line. You have to be stronger, older, more experienced. And Norvell and his staff have clearly felt you've got to have transfers up front, OL, D-line. So again, it's about balance. And I think everybody says, I prefer this formula or that formula. To me, it's what's that middle? What's that happy medium that makes it work for you as a coach? And again, Dabo Swinney doesn't think he has to be in the middle at all, but a lot of coaches have found you've got to be in that middle somewhere.
Well, the middle, as you explained it, is the norm. The old-fashioned way of signing a high school senior, letting them finish their senior year, graduate in May, maybe come in the summer, redshirt as a freshman, play 4 years, that model's gone. I hate it. I don't like where college football is. If I were the commissioner or king, I would do something different. However, I still like 3 yards in a cloud of dust, so I wouldn't be going 4 and 5 receivers. So how far would I go in this world as it has changed? The reality is this is the new reality, whether we like it or not.
Bob, I have a question, and Keith, this will rock your world, speaking of 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I don't know the answer to this, Bob, but in light of Florida State getting dinged by the NCAA and losing 5% of scholarships over 2 years, does the 85 count even matter in the NIL era anymore? Meaning, Mr. Jones from Wildwood, we'd like you to come to Florida State. We're not going to put you on scholarship, but we're going to give you $150,000 and you're going to pay your tuition and your room and board out of that. I mean, aren't there ways around this, Bob? I'm being a little facetious, but I don't know that the 85 number matters anymore, or does it? What am I missing?
I think that penalty on the surface was the one that concerned me initially. But when I looked at it and I thought about it, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a couple of phone calls. Who can I get on the football team? An academic scholarship, who can expand their bright futures? If not, who can I go to battle's end and get the NIL money? There are solutions currently, the way we've got college football set up, so that you're not going to the guy who's number 81, 82, 83, or 84, 85 on the roster. You don't have to go that far down the road anymore and perhaps tell a guy you've lost your scholarship. So I think when the NCAA puts out these kind of penalties, I think that's probably one of the worst ones to potentially put given the old standard, because then you're telling a kid, you're penalizing the kid and not the coach or the program. But again, Tom, I think to your point, it is, there are good solutions these days. There are really, really good solutions to make this work.
Guys, unless I made it up, I read a published report yesterday, maybe, where one Kirby Smart said the way he would fix it is when you come in, you declare, do I want to be on scholarship or do I want to receive NIL money? And you make the choice, and that's what you live with. I don't like that idea, but it's certainly along the lines of maybe bad ideas lead to good ideas, Tommy.
At least it's a proposed solution instead of just complaining about the problem, which is right. What we specialize in this show on right here. It feels like, to your point, Keith, I don't know that we'll get to 4 years, but if the players become employees, then at some point you can withhold their earnings contingent on them playing in a bowl game, or contingent, you know, you got to be here for 2 or 3 years, or you can't, you know, there's basically a non-compete at that point. Maybe you can't transfer and play for a year. I don't know all the particulars of that, but it feels like there'd be more of a framework if and when we get to that. But who knows? I mean, right now there's no framework is what it feels like.
Well, and Bob, you made the comment earlier about free agency. Let's remember, we're all old enough, maybe not Tommy, but we're all old enough to remember when free agency, I believe in the major leagues, it was it Kurt Floyd or Kurt Flood?
Kurt Flood.
There was a time when even in MLB and NFL and AFL, there was no such thing as free agency.
Yeah, I think I try to live in a world that acknowledges you have to be progressive with where sports is. And like you said, KJ, I'm not sure I like a lot of college football right now. There's a lot that I really loathe, let's be honest. But if you live in a progressive mindset, or at least try to be open-minded to where things stand with the athletes and the coaches, I think that's just the mindset that we all have to be in.
We're talking with Bob Frantair, Osceola Insider. We need to dive deeper into the portal. And also there's some sad news involving a Florida State legend, which we'll get to in our next segment. So stay with us. More Front Row Noles coming up.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to @_TomBlock and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Noles, Tom, KJ, and Bob Ferranti, our Osceola Insider. Bob is on the Earl Bacon Agency hotline. Bob, we're not going to go player by player here, but general thoughts. I think FSU has, as we're recording on Tuesday, has 14 guys that they've taken in the transfer portal, and 9 of them are what you'd call a blue chip, meaning they're 4-star or above, and I think one of them's not ranked yet. And when I look at the team rankings, Florida State's got more blue chips than anybody in the top 25 in terms of the transfer portal, except maybe Ole Miss, who's number one and has the same amount. Anyway, they're doing well in the portal again. Do you think they've addressed their needs? Sufficiently is not even the right word, or adequately, because that undersells it in my mind. How do you think they've addressed their needs so far?
I think the big questions to me were, what, linebacker? You got DJ Lundy, and you got the transfer from Alabama. And then you needed to address defensive line. I think they've done that, you know, with Marvin Jones Jr. and the Oregon State transfer, who I probably won't even try to pronounce his last name. But point being, I think they needed to address the offensive line to some extent, defensive line, defensive front. That's where we know depth is going to win you football games. You're going to be able to sustain an injury here or there. You have a good rotation of rested guys later in the game. Now, to your question, is there a Jared Verse there? Is there a Braden Fisk there? Is there a real difference maker, a diamond in the rough type? And that's really tough. I don't think you see that to some extent until spring practice, until August, when you see how these guys line up and you can say, that guy's a wow. That guy really stands out. Like, we could tell it, I think, at times, really early with Trey Benson, you know, two springs ago. People were asking, well, was Trey Benson's knee all the way back? I mean, within a couple of practices, you said, Trey Benson's going to be phenomenal for what he can do for the football team. So I think they needed a lot of pieces to be filled in at various position groups. If you look at linebacker, if they didn't have DJ Lundy coming back as one example, if you didn't grab the Alabama transfer there, Sean Murphy, you'd question where you'd be at linebacker just purely from an experience standpoint. You have talent, a lot of freshmen, a lot of rising sophomores. So yeah, I think it's a really good way that they've shaped up the roster. I'm not sure if there's that high end Jared Verse type, if that makes sense.
Bob, I haven't heard a discussion or at least a comment about this question. And maybe I just missed it, so I'll ask it of you. Of the Florida State kids that went into the portal, is there anybody you would identify and say that FSU is going to sorely miss?
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd say historically there have been a few. I'm not sure about this particular cycle. I'm trying to think position by position who they've lost that was of. I would say
My
let's
question
say
is
Bless
specific to
Harris,
right
right?
now. My question is
Sure.
specific to right now. Because again, as Tommy's pointed out, as you pointed out, some of these kids coming in are very highly touted that you've got through the
Yeah.
portal.
The only one that comes to mind offhand, I would say Bless Harris. If you're factoring in an offensive tackle's importance, plus you want to get in that 8 to 10 guys on the offensive line who you know could really help you. Now, can you make that up because you've got other guys on the roster who you feel can fill in? So from a depth standpoint, you feel good about the next man up. I would say definitely yes, you feel good about what you have at offensive tackle. Would I love to have a Bless Harris type back? Then sure. I think that would be kind of my hedging the answer type response.
Well, I think DJ Lundy was the answer until he came back to FSU. He was the curious one to me. I'm looking at the list now, and I mean, honestly, I don't know how you wouldn't look at the current list of guys coming in and say it's an upgrade over guys going out. And I hate to put it that way, but I mean, Winston Wright left a while ago, Dylan Brown Turner, Preston Daniel, CJ Campbell, AJ Duffy, Daughtry Richardson, Sapp. Iabami Tafasi, Bless Harris, you mentioned Tyler Keltner, Thomas Schrader, Rodney Hill, Malcolm Ray, Tate Rodemaker, Gilbert Edmond, Goldie Lawrence, and Dennis Briggs. I mean, obviously the shiny new toy is always the one we get excited about, right? So that's part of it. So we'll see. And I wish those guys good luck. Markieston Douglas is maybe the one name that surprised me when he got in there, but all in all, it feels like a pretty good class or good group that they've brought in. And do you think they're done right now until after the spring, Bob? Or and I say that because Alabama's basically got a yard sale going on, and Washington does. And if Harbaugh leaves, Michigan's going to have a discount rack available. Well, they may not be discounted for NIL purposes, but they're available.
It's a
Exactly.
clearance rack. It's a clearance rack. Prices are not marked down, but it's still a clearance rack.
And this is the crazy thing about, the coaching carousel has caused this. What does Jim Harbaugh potentially do? But the portal opens up across the country with a coaching change. So Washington's players are available. Arizona's players are available because of Jed Fish's move to Washington. What does Harbaugh do? Is there a chance he land a Michigan player? I think from a scholarship count standpoint, and again, we have to kind of put an asterisk by it. What does Mike Norvell do about these five scholarships that he has to kind of account for moving forward? They are, by our count, high. They're at about 87 or so. But I do think we'll see some attrition coming out of the spring. A lot of guys will see where they are on the depth chart. They may reevaluate. Hey, am I going to move on? Or do I want to stay? I think Mike Norvell is always going to have his eye out for who pops in the portal. And if that's a guy that, to use his term, fits, and it's at the position where they need a guy, I think they'll go grab him. I think they will. But I think from just a pure quantity, I think the quantity of what we saw, say, a week ago, that kind of blitz to grab guys and the right fits, I think they're done from that standpoint. But could they be grabbing one more here or there, say in the April window? Then that's a possibility too.
Hey Bob, let's change gears. I mentioned sad news involving a Florida State legend. I think anybody listening to this program is aware of the battle that Mike Martin's been going through. And the Animals of Section B put on X about 30 minutes before we started recording here on Tuesday evening that they spoke to Carol Martin and that 11 is now in hospice care, which would indicate that the end is probably near for Mike Martin. And certainly thoughts, prayers, and everything, not just with Carol, but with the whole family. Obviously, I've known Meat for a number of years and Mary Beth and the family. I don't know, we could fill a 24-hour marathon of Front Row Knowles with Mike Martin stories. I don't know if you guys have one in particular that jumps out. This is not a specific story. I would just say that, having worked and Lulu was doing it at the time too, but 7 years of calling FSU baseball games. And traveling with the team, he was always just first class and approachable and professional. And you'd learn something from him every time you talked to him. He was confident and believed in what he did. And I know he never won a national title, but you can't argue with all the wins that he got. There's just an awful lot there. you know, and it's sad to think about. This is where we are right now with him. He turned 80 in earlier this year, I think.
Just somebody who was so gracious with his time, I think, is the personal takeaway for all of us. And, you know, everybody from fans to beat writers and broadcasters, if you wanted a one-on-one with 11, with Mike Martin Sr., he was going to make time for you and really think about your question and really give you a as good of a thoughtful response and really kick it around of what it meant to him, what it meant to the program, what it meant to college baseball. I think he was really looking out for college baseball too, you know, and how he responded to questions. I think he cared about his players, about the sport, about where it was going, and loved those interactions through the years. And again, like you said, thoughts with the FSU family.
Guys, my input is very simple. I came real close to playing for Mike Martin. I was approached about trying out for the baseball team under the prior regime, and then they made the coaching change. I blame Steinbrenner for that because he called Hauser back to the Yankees. Or I might have had an opportunity to play for him. That's not a regret, but that's something I would have very much looking forward to. Not saying I would have been any good at it, but I would have had the opportunity to once called him coach, and I would have been very proud of that.
So the answer to the question, who ended Keith Jones' baseball career, is George Steinbrenner? Is that what I'm...
That's the story I'm sticking with.
Yeah, we all have stories, and we can, you know, certainly take a deeper walk down memory lane. Mike Martin was very, fans know this, he was incredibly hands-on with his product. And the first time I ever remember interviewing him, this is working at B89, so I think it would have been spring of 1989, which was the end of my freshman year. Literally, we did the interview behind second base while BP was going on, and it was behind the screen, and he was working with, it was Rocky Rao and Brian Gilliland, were the shortstop and second baseman, or second baseman and shortstop, and he's working with them on their turn at the bag for double plays, and that was where we conducted the interview. That's how hands-on he was at that time. And obviously that was before, I mean, there were plenty of World Series trips in the 80s, but the 90s is when they really went and made it an annual occurrence. So there's just a lot there. Bob, I left out the word gracious. You said it. I think that's probably should have been first on my list because that's definitely accurate with him.
Yeah, I think he was very warm, very welcoming to the media. You know, we always kind of commented, I guess I should say, that young media may be reluctant to ask a question, how to phrase it. He was so good with, like you said, you know, the freshmen or the sophomores who hadn't been in a press conference and could ask a question. And he would, again, give you a really good response. I think he loved those press conferences at the end of the Super Regionals too, because when it was over, he'd look at you and say, boys, just going to say my favorite words, see you in Omaha. And he loved to wrap it up, and we knew it was coming, and he loved getting a kick out of saying that to everybody.
Am I the only one, guys, that has absolutely surprised that there were must have been about 3,000 kids in junior high school that had Mike Martin at Raw before he actually got to the college coaching ranks? Everybody I run into remembers Coach Martin from middle school.
Well, and he was a basketball coach back in the day too, right?
I think he was at God Be High, right?
Yeah, and if memory serves, this is where he and Carol came on their honeymoon, and they never left. So, quite a career, obviously, for Mike Martin. All right, let's change gears real quick as we finish up, Bob. And this is a credit to Coach Ham, because we've not talked a lot of. Scratch that. We haven't talked any men's basketball here lately. So apologies to Ham and Stan and the rest of the staff. But when you win four in a row in the league, I don't care who the four are against, that says something. They got a big opportunity tonight against Miami, and then they come home against Clemson. And I know Miami's, you know, they've done very well under their coach. They're 12-4 right now. But what do you think about this turnaround we've seen over the last 2 weeks, Bob?
You know, I sat with Coach Hamilton for the Lipscomb game, which was December 30th before the Orange Bowl. And he was just, I think he was really just frustrated about how inconsistent the team had been. And he really said the only thing they've done well, the only thing they've done consistently is be inconsistent. He was just incredibly frustrated. In the last couple of weeks, I think he's seen this team come together. You get Primo Spears coming off that two-time waiver rule where He was forced to sit out. Cam Corin back after the fractured toe, to get Jalen Gainey somewhat back up to speed, to get a semblance of a healthy, competitive basketball roster where he can run what he wants to do, where he can use the depth and the defense. I think he will admit it's not there yet. It's not close, just from a strength and conditioning standpoint with a lot of guys. But it's getting in a really good spot. I kind of thought the season was going to take a bad turn after that Lipscomb loss. It was December 30th, but the way they've rallied, the way this team has really competed and pulled off some wins against teams that you didn't think they'd be really competitive against. I mean, Wake Forest at home to beat Notre Dame. And now we'll see what happens up against Miami and Matthew Cleveland. It's been a really impressive and fun to watch turnaround.
I love the defense and the defense leading the offense. That's a recipe that I spent a lot of years commenting on with Decker Hoff, and we certainly enjoy it, and I hope that remains consistent. That's a recipe that works in the Hamilton offense, Hamilton basketball camp. I really like it.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Junkyard Dog days a little bit right now with the depth and how many guys they're playing. I'll say this, Bob, and I have not watched a ton of FSU hoops this year, but the little bit I have, seeing Baba Miller progress, honestly, as long as, you know, we'll just throw some more stones at the NCAA here, but I mean, they did him such a disservice last year by a half-year suspension. He's developing now, but he would be so much further along if he had played, you know, if it was a five-game suspension last year or whatever, but he doesn't have to score to affect the game. I mean, he's altering shots. He's distributing way better than a guy his size should be. I know he's still a little raw, Bob, but he's talented. You can see that.
Yeah, he looks much more comfortable in who he is, what he can do. We've seen the block shots. I think he's had three in the last couple of games there. So, again, you know, this isn't a true Leonard Hamilton team with a bunch of centers. He's winning with a lot of power forward types, or a lot of, you know, stretch four types. And maybe Baba is a mix of a lot of different things. Baba was behind because of injury, because of the NCAA suspension, a rule that really should have been off the books years ago. But I think Baba in part gained this confidence because of his success, you know, over in Europe over the summer. What he did with the Spanish national team, it kind of catapulted him into this year. And really, you think about some of the top players on the team. I think actually Leonard Hamilton mentioned on Monday, he talked about my big four, and he didn't mention Baba among his big four. So it kind of tells you Baba might be a first round pick, and he doesn't fully wrap his head around Baba being one of those top guys. It again illustrates the depth, it illustrates the patience in development that they have with these guys. And again, who knows how they're going to stack up against a Miami, a North Carolina, a Duke, but you see the growth, you see the development in the players. I think that's what the fans can truly appreciate right now.
Congrats to Brooke Wyckoff and the women's team too, by the way, who won a pair of top 25 games last week. And I was just looking at their schedule, Bob, and they're at Syracuse this week. And if we have a hard freeze going on in Tallahassee, I can only imagine what the forecast is in Syracuse. So I'm going to suggest they pack warm and then they stay hot on the basketball court.
They will not be traveling to, what is it, Dino or Dino Barbecue. They'll have to have it delivered.
Yes, exactly. And you won't have to worry about transporting it in a cooler if you order anything frozen, right? It'll be fine. Bob, we'll let you go, sir.
Take care, guys.
All right, Bob Ferrante, our Osceola Insider, and we'll have more Front Row Knowles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to @_TomBlock and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Knowles, a couple minutes to finish things up. Always enjoy the conversation with Bob and Keith, this basketball team has been fun to watch. Now, I don't know how the Miami game will go tonight, But they got Clemson again this weekend, and I really do like watching Bob Miller. Complete side note, by the way, Scotty Barnes is tearing up the NBA, if you watch that at all. He was only here 1 year, but he's a different player than Bob, but you could see in the 1 year that Scotty was here, he saw the court, he could pass, he could rebound. He wasn't a great shooter, and I watched Bob again. They're different players, different positions. Bob can pass, he sees the court, he can alter shots, he's got length, he does all these things, and he's not as consistent as a shooter, but you know that's coming. I mean, he to me is the next star, obviously.
And his upside, and that's the one thing that Coach Hamilton and in particular Stan Jones, who works with the bigs, have historically, over a long period of time, been able to recognize the upside. Not what you're doing right now, but what you can grow into, and we can help you get there. And he is another of a long list of players that I think are going to look back at their careers at Florida State and say, you know, I was in the right place at the right time and I benefited from the program.
I'm not going to say that I didn't enjoy the program maybe a little more when four of the guys out of the five on the court were going to go to the NBA ultimately. But I am kind of smiling watching this team go 10 or 11 deep and all these guys playing 10 minutes and trying to get better on defense and hustle and, you know, those things that were sort of the hallmark before Leonard and Stan turned it up a notch in terms of the recruiting and CY and others that were, you know, Dennis Gates.
It's back to basics or back to Hamilton basics. There are certain things that have to change and you have to adapt, but there are also other things that remain consistent. And, you know, that's one of the things that's a testimony to Coach Saban and his retirement from Alabama. You know, he was able to embrace, particularly through his coordinators and the selection of his coordinators, you know, how the game evolved. But one of the things that made him consistent, same thing that made Coach Bowden consistent, is you don't waver from the fundamentals. And you find kids that buy into them, and then you find kids that excel through them. And obviously Coach Saban did it. Coach Bowden did it. We've seen Leonard do it over an extended period of time. It's really nice to finally and always see coaches rewarded for the hard work and the basics that they put in place. Because I know a lot of people have been disappointed with Florida State's basketball program, but here's an opportunity for them to get back on the wagon and enjoy the product that Leonard and company are putting out there.
Well said, KJ. We are out of time. Stay warm. Take care of the missus. Go get some more firewood. Turn the heat up, whatever you need to do.
So that's the difference between you and me, Tommy. You've got firewood. I've got gas. I flip a switch and my fireplace is going.
I could go a lot of directions, but I'm just going to choose to end the show right there, Keith.
You're a mature, you're very wise, Mr. Block.
Point made, point received. Folks, we'll do this again next week on Front Row Knolls. Till then, he's Keith. I'm Tom. Thanks for tuning in.